Welcome to the Popcorn Talk Network, for the online broadcast network that features movie discussion, news, and interviews. Press one.
Popcorn Talk. We talk movies.
I'm opening.
We have
an eye, sort of a nostril, two teeth. One of the teeth has a small cavity. Close call, folks, but I think we got here just in time.
Presented by Maria Menounos and Kevin Undergaro. This is Anatomy of a Movie. In-depth discussions and breakdowns of various movie titles. And now that you've seen the movie, let the dissection begin.
Lincoln.
That's right, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to another Anatomy of a Movie here on Popcorn Talk. Today we're talking Deadpool. And for those of you who heard my mini State of the Union speech last week, we're doing things a little bit different. We're trying to jam-pack so many things. And so if you've commented before, please comment again. Let us know how we're doing, because
we're changing it up.
We're changing things up. And there's so much to talk about Deadpool. So if we don't get to everything, that's because there's an article being written every second.
You don't see, we have like 6 pages of notes.
Six pages, double-sided.
In an hour.
Pretty much the entire internet is just talking about Deadpool.
That's right. I think statistically 42%. anyway, I'm your host, Phil Svitek, CEO of AfterBuzz TV Networks and Popcorn Talk, and a feature film editor. We have next to me Zach Wilson, writer, director, and geek.
Formal title.
Professional geek.
Professional geek.
And Marvel expert.
And these are all of his,
I brought in some toys. Cowboy Deadpool, Leaping Deadpool, X-Force Deadpool, who's holding a little tick pick, which we'll talk about later. Deadpool with his mask off, looking like an avocado, had sex with an angrier avocado.
There you go. And we have Sarah Stretton.
Yes.
She's the host of Popcorn Talks, Box Office Breakdown, and of course, an actress and writer.
Mm-hmm. That is what I do.
And that is what she does.
That's who I am.
And John Comerford, he'll never admit it, but he is one of Hollywood's leading script doctors and acting coaches. So therefore, I'm going to admit it for him. without further ado, let's start with overall impressions. I know we're all dying, but why don't we start with you, John?
Well, I loved it. I loved the irreverence of it. I thought it was kooky, a lot of fun. And I thought, you know, speaking to what Sarah and I had a conversation a couple weeks ago about an author or a scriptwriter knowing its audience and writing to that audience, I thought they were extremely successful at that. And don't you think?
Completely.
I thought they hit that right down that line. I thought they were – I mean, it was perfect for that audience. And I thought it was great. It was a lot of fun to watch. It was a lot of fun to – well, I mean, what can you not like about it? I mean, everything was good. Everything did a good job.
I think that – I'm just going to take over. I think that they they hook you in from the beginning. I think the opening sequence just lets you know what you're in store for. It lets you know what to expect, the attitude of the film. It's original and fun and had my entire audience cracking up. Really, really enjoyed it. I think that for what they went for, they just went for something that was a little outrageous, a little out there, a mix of new and old, and just kind of sticking their middle finger up at everyone. And it worked. And I think that as I went through it and I kind of tried to think about the elements, like the storytelling, the character building, character arcs, plot holes, I think there are some in there, but I don't fault the story for them because of what they made it up with. Because of how strong the humor is, the attitude was, I don't really care that there were plot holes or that the whole thing was based around him just wanting to get, like, his face pretty again. Like, that's his major goal. That didn't bother me. I'm just like, yeah, it works for them because the movie worked.
Yeah. This movie for me was exactly, to every degree, what it was supposed to be. It was no more, no less, exactly what it was always supposed to be with a Deadpool feature film. It was super faithful to the source material while also being, I think, accessible to new fans as well. And just, it hit the comedy beats that it needed to. It made fun of itself in a way that Deadpool always does. And it just, it was a breath of fresh air in February for movies. It was fun. It was fun back to back.
Yeah, what I liked about it, I mean, what I'm excited to talk about with this movie in particular was, you know, it kind of started out where superhero movies did start off and they were very particular, like Sam Raimi's Spider-Man. People are saying that was Sam Raimi's Spider-Man. It wasn't just Spider-Man. It wasn't just X-Men. It was Bryan Singer's X-Men. And so with this, it even though Tim Miller's relatively, he's done visual effects. This is his first film. It feels like this is what he would do as a movie. You know, it mm-hmm. doesn't feel like, oh, if a studio just made Deadpool. And that's what I enjoyed about it. The only criticism that I found is people are kind of questioning what the villain aspect of it is. But at the end of the day, it's so good that who cares?
That is kind of the main point. I think that I was not a huge Deadpool fan before this movie.
I had no idea what it was, to be honest.
Like, it wasn't one of the characters that I grew up on. But having talked to a lot of people who really did enjoy this, it does seem like it was very in line with the character. Those fans felt like it was really encapsulated and fulfilled. For me, I think that I'm sure we're going to get into the dilemma of how this was made and the struggle it went through, but for how long it took and how long Ryan Reynolds had to kind of push for it, I think it came at the perfect time.
Yeah.
So I think that wait is a blessing for this movie. How this struck, the character of Deadpool being so off the wall in a time where superhero movies are just done over and over and over again and are looking for a new way, this fresh character provided the perfect backdrop for that, where they didn't have to, it's not like they had to take Captain America and be like, oh, people are getting sick or whatnot of superhero movies, we have to do something different, let's put fourth wall and everything in that spin. It doesn't work for that character, I think.
Yeah.
As much as this character leans towards like an original superhero movie.
Reaction to it. And also, you're right, it couldn't have happened earlier or much earlier because the vernacular wasn't out in the world. I mean, we've seen so many comic book heroes come onto this big screen that now we have all that, we know all the origin stories, we know how they lay out, and this is formulaic to some degree, or not this one, but most of them are formulaic, and this one pokes fun at all of that, which is the character from the conception.
Yeah.
But the things to poke to work.
You couldn't have done it earlier because we would not have had it wouldn't have been in the zeitgeist. We wouldn't know what they were referring to. It's like, why is that funny? Because we wouldn't have had those reference points.
Yeah, I mean, the character always breaks the fourth wall. It's sort of the beauty of the character. It's the only comic book character who's like aware that he's in a comic book and constantly making references to that fact. So, but that's what they did. They took that and said like, okay, what does that look like on the big screen?
He fell.
By the way,
for those of you listening and or watching, we do post all the pictures that we use throughout the episode and also our rundown. So, you know, we'll jump around, but all of the research is there. So if there's points that we don't get to, you can still get the full scope of everything that we were able to find and dig deeper. But you mentioned it, Sarah, in terms of the development. This dates back to 2000, and the scope of all of it, New Line Cinema had the rights to it. They were trying to figure it out. David S. Goyer was kind of involved, and then he went the Christopher Nolan route with Batman. And
small movies.
Those small, yes,
no, it's, you know, nothing big.
And then, you know, the whole thing went into turnaround, which is basically it gets sold off to somebody else, and Fox buys it. Mm-hmm. And we all, I've seen X-Men Origins Wolverine, but it was so long ago for me. So I don't know, Zach, like that, because that character was in there.
Yeah, and this Ryan is Reynolds, how weird it is. I saw that movie. I actually one of the few that I kind of liked Wolverines. I didn't think it was as bad as everybody said
it was.
I can
speak up for Wolverine because I liked Wolverine, even though everyone else
did. I didn't even get they were the same character.
Yeah, well,
the mouth sewn shut, and
that's the thing, they're
the
not.
Katana swords.
Ryan Reynolds even said, like, when he read this script, he was like, I hate this. Like, this is not Deadpool. But they were like, all right, if you don't want to do it, we'll just get somebody else. And he's like,
I'll do it.
And they did. I mean, they just got rid of, like, everything about the character.
Yeah.
And they make constant reference to it in this movie.
The fact that they sew his mouth shut.
Yeah.
They made him, I mean, the guy's a brick with a mouth, and they sew it shut.
Yeah. I mean, they took, it was the, like, it was that, like, movie studio version of a character. Like, it was the most movie studio, like, getting their fingerprints onto a movie that we've seen. Like, taking the, instead of he's had swords on his back, they put it in his skin. It was like the weirdest things. And it's not like, we don't need to harp on like the quality of that movie, but it just didn't, it didn't use the character in a way that the character was designed to be used. And like, for maybe for the purposes of that story, it might have worked, but not for the people who like Deadpool and why that character has resonated with people over the years.
I will say, although I like Wolverine movies, I'll watch them, that movie didn't make Deadpool a resonant character for the general public. I don't think a lot of people, even who did see that movie, came out of it with a fascination about Deadpool or...
Yeah.
Like, it wasn't the highlight of that movie. It wasn't one of the major takeaways. So I think that, like, if you're mentioning Deadpool, like, this is, when it comes to movies, this is what people will think of, the movie we're talking about now. No one's going to really think, I think, about the Wolverine version. Like, I think that's just now been, like, faded. Man. It's just faded into the past.
Yeah, except for the references within this movie to just, like, yeah. It's like, I'll sell your mouth shut.
To Sarah's point, I think, you know, it's almost better that this did get made and it was this crappy because you can speak to it. Like, had this been a good movie...
You're talking about Wolverine?
Wolverine. Like, Origin. First off, you know, they did want to spin off Deadpool off of this movie and we would have kind of gone that timeline of it, which, dear Lord, what that would have been. But, you know, again, the whole sewing the mouth shut, I mean, there's so many Easter eggs that we'll talk about, but it does make it funny because he can pull from that and directly, you know, just use that as a point of going against.
And then, true, and then for the production route, which we were talking about, so the main catalyst for this getting made was, I don't know if we're there yet, but the leaked footage.
Yeah.
I mean, that is really what got the wheels spinning for this. And my favorite part of this whole story about footage getting leaked and what and the legality or illegality of that act is the unapologetic nature of everyone involved talking about the leak. Everyone thinks it's such a good idea, like a good thing that happened. No one's bummed about it. Everyone's like credits it to this movie being made. People are joking. Ryan Reynolds is quoted as saying, like, 70% chance wasn't him. Like, the way that they've kind of approached that scenario just is reminiscent of, like, how the movie is. Like, it's just turned into, like, a fun joke that no one apologizes for.
Well, I think it's different. Yeah. I think it's different than if the movie got leaked, right?
Yeah.
And that was X-Men Origins, right? That I actually leaked of all things.
One of the Wolverine movies.
I think it was the solo movie. The last one. Not,
it was definitely
not
one
Origins.
Of the Wolverine ones, though. Like,
yeah.
Either way, definitely
was.
There's a lot of leaks out there.
But what I'm saying is, it would have been different if it was that, like, you know, if Deadpool got out without any of its visual effects, like, that would be detrimental versus this is just test footage at the end of the day, you know? And so you can have fun with it regardless.
It was test footage and it was good. That was the thing, is it was, even just that was like a fun thing to watch. Like, I watched it again this morning, like, before we came in here, and it's still, like, beyond the fact that it's, like, they just reused everything from it in the movie.
Yeah, Steven, if you want to get, we have the clip, we'll play a little bit if you want to pull it up, Steven, while we talk.
But it was so much fun to watch. It was a good action sequence, with these, like, silly moments in it that we haven't seen that before. We haven't seen, especially when that leaked, like, a character being silly while in the middle of an action sequence. And that, I think, enough people connected to it that weren't just Deadpool fans, but just moviegoers connected to that little scene that they were able to say, oh, there's an audience here.
Yeah. I agree. And, what the most interesting part of all of it, you know, as we've been mentioning, is that Ryan Reynolds just stuck with it. You know, I mean, this really is his passion piece as much as anybody else's. And then when Tim Miller got kind of involved, you know, it became a passion of his. And, you know, he was the studio that did the visuals stuff, Blur Studio, for the test. And then that's how he kind of came into it.
A huge thing for him. I mean, he is not – this movie – in general, I think besides all the fandom around it, a lot of the debates and the talking points are about, you know, it's R rating, it's humor, the fact that they had such a low budget, $58 million for a comic book movie, and on top of that, that they did have, I mean, Miller's not a big name.
He's a no name.
He's been in the industry, but he's a first-time director, I believe, or at least a feature. Yeah. Like, those scenarios, you add them all up, and you present that to a studio, that's not your best-looking picture. Like, hey, we have kind of this thing that a lot of people might not be able to see because we're going to make it rated R, and we have a first-time director, and we have no budget, but we're going to make this. Yeah. And it turned out really well, and I think that a lot of people can now use this as a talking point for future movies. It is data. Data that you can present and be like, look what Deadpool did.
Well, yeah. What I liked about it really, you know, to that point that it is a low budget, it's able to take that and use it creatively, right? Mm-hmm. In the writing process, Brett Reese and Paul Wernick, there's a point at which almost like about to go into production, they got, hey, you got to do a bunch of rewrites because of a $7 million,
decrease. They cut it by $7 million.
You know, and they were able to do
a small
that.
Budget for this type of movie.
That's a very big chunk.
Yeah.
Yeah, so
let's see. What's that, the 10%?
It's more than
10%. It translated to, I believe, cutting about 10 or 11 pages. Script out. And you're talking about 10 to 11 pages, not in a drama, but 10 to 11 pages in, like, an action movie. Like, that's a lot.
Yeah, which can be a ton. I mean, that explains why it's only, like, what, 90 minutes? 95 minutes?
It's an hour and 40.
Hour 40.
Mm-hmm. I mean, some of the stuff, there was a motorcycle chase scene between Wade and Francis. Additional,
they got axed.
Yeah. Additional villains were cut. Several action sequences, and the fights in the end were scaled out. So the reason why he forgets his guns in the cab was directly because of that.
Yeah, it's a budgetary reaction.
So
that's good. But see, this is where they really excelled is like limiting budgets on stuff like this. Like, it goes back to like the things you've heard from like Robert Rodriguez and Quentin Tarantino. Right. It's like when they are forced to limit their budgets, they come up with better products because it forces them to think outside.
And not
the
only
box.
That, but they figured out a way to do it that was control. Was character based. The character, forget his name. They used it, and it works with that character. I don't know that you could do it with Captain America, but it works with Deadpool. They figured that out. That was great.
Speaking of budgetary constraints, not only did it affect the gun scene, but a couple of other things that this smaller budget affected was, of course, cameos, which is one of the reasons so many of the Easter eggs, supposedly there's over 100, are dialogue-based instead of having actual actors come in because they had to save it. It's the same reason that you had... I'm going to mess up her name, Nuclear Warhead.
Negasonic Teenage Warhead.
Thank you. I'm like, I can't ever get that one straight in my mind. But it's why she got picked versus some certain other X-Men just because of the budget constraints. And then when it came to FX, this budget made them create new ways. One of the biggest things was they were worried about Deadpool's facial expressions. Mm-hmm. So, of course, they were trying to do the CGI eyes and give him a lot of motion, but the normal ways were so expensive that they actually had to come up with a new way that focused on like warping his face, because there was like 250 like animated facial shots. So they had to come up with their own new process to battle the budgetary constraints but still try and give Deadpool all of that emotion.
It worked. The eyes looked amazing. Mm-hmm. It's one of those things that like comics just sort of like ignores when like characters' masks have emotions on them, but this worked. Like it doesn't need to make sense why his mask is moving around his eyes, but it connected to
it
the character.
It really adds.
It worked.
Visually.
There's a funny quote of why, I'm going to look it up, but of why Ryan Reynolds loved the character. And Zach, maybe you can speak, isn't it in the comics or somewhere it's written that Deadpool is Ryan Reynolds with a mix of this Chinese dog.
Sharpay.
Apparently this was like before he'd ever read the character, or like he may have been aware of it, but just like somebody put the reference in there. And so he's like, I should read this thing. And then he jumped into, then he just, it became a love affair with the character, I guess. And he just kept, I think we have a photo of the,
we do have a photo of the dog.
Yeah,
of the Sharpay.
Because here's the thing, it's like I kind of heard of this dog before, but when you really see the dog, right? I mean, that just feels like Deadpool in the movie. Yeah. You could see why they would make that reference. You know.
Ugh. Yeah, it's a radioactive Sharpay. But it was cool that they paid homage to that, and they did a number of very specific comic references.
I have a question. How did the look of Deadpool play off for you guys? Like the makeup, the effect, the costuming. As a fan of the comic, did it work? Was there anything you thought should have been handled differently?
The costume looked amazing. Okay. It was incredibly detailed. Like even down to like he had the little like throwing knives that I don't think they ever used. No. But I kept noticing them like right on his chest, like that he could have just taken out at any time. Even with the little like thing on the back of his head, that's very unique to Deadpool. That was all great. As far as like his face, I almost wanted it to be grosser, but I get why they, like, I didn't need it. It was just like, cause like, it wasn't quite as disgusting
as I like picture.
You might be more disgusting.
I mean, it could have been, like, at the end when Sheila goes home, I'm like, it's not that bad.
I was like, I got used to it pretty quick. There was no unveiling, and I wasn't like, oh no. Like, it was pretty standard. I mean, he was at certain points in like full body makeup, like in the naked fight scene, they had that. Which also, because of the makeup, he wasn't allowed to wear a robe for supposedly 2 days on set during that.
Wear a robe?
Yeah, because of the makeup. Huh. Because he had full body makeup in the naked fight scene. Right. So he couldn't, but he couldn't put a robe on because it would mess up the makeup. Yeah. So he was just, you know,
walking around,
waltzing
naked.
Around.
I think you can see he got comfortable being naked. From the movie.
I feel like he may have lied. Like, oh, the makeup people told me not to put on a robe. Like, well, do you have to not wear underpants too?
No, just
sorry.
Showing.
It's just
a
how
full bodysuit. It's not just a. It's a full. You can't just
there's
roll
a layer
out of a full
here.
Body suit.
I feel like PA should have been assigned to walk around with a towel around him.
I'm sure he wasn't actually just like letting it all hang out.
There's mixed reports. You can look into it. There's mixed reports. There's like the non-robe reports. There's some interviews, I believe, on Ellen DeGeneres. Then there's a whole report of a CG
what
penis.
What were they reporting
like,
on? How dead was
who
his
knows?
Pool? What was the?
I didn't hear about the CG penis. Yeah.
If you look into some FX details, it's listed.
I feel like I don't want to type that into Google.
Don't.
That's why Sarah did it for us.
Thank you. Along with her tix pics.
Well, so. along obviously Deadpool's kind of the central character, and you know, we'll kind of certainly talk more about him as this goes on in various iterations. But in terms of the other cast members and characters, who stood out to you the most? And from talking to a lot of people, V is the one that, you know, stands up. She's the loving Valentine, and obviously people love her from Homeland and everything else, so she's got that history.
I just
people
knew
are
her
falling in love with her.
The crazy eye girl from How I Met Your Mother. That was like where I was like after the movie. Oh,
there you go. She's in Gotham.
I thought that a lot of people were just pretty. They were pretty solid. I liked Vanessa's role. Getting into that a little bit more, I know I understood their decision to keep her primarily human. In this, or not fully going into anything that she might be another mutant, just because I think that would have really changed the storyline and made it a lot longer, and they said that was for the time constraints. But I liked her performance. The moment Ed came on, I just always think of him from Game of Thrones, because he was a role on Game of Thrones, and he left the show, was recast to go on and do things like Transporter, Refueled, or whatever it's called, and movies like this. So obviously Game of Thrones is fantastic, but it sounds like he's making good career choices. He's getting some pretty big movies.
I mean, Game of Thrones isn't a bad career choice either.
It's definitely not, but now he can say he was on Game of Thrones and did these movies.
Fair enough.
Like, that's a lot. I've heard a couple of people saying that they thought Gina Carano, who played Angel Dust, was a little underutilized. For me, it's hard to remember her having any lines.
Her background's not acting, you know.
That's true.
I mean, she is a fighter.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I thought she served the piece well. I mean, I wouldn't. Yeah. Don't know that I would have done anything else with
it. I kind of liked the stoic, like, enforcer role. Like, it worked. It was a good character. Like, the strong, silent type really worked for her.
Yeah, and I mean, if you compare that, like, Ronda Rousey has much more of a personality in general, you know what I mean? And obviously she's very widely known versus, like, Gina. And so you look at, yeah, I agree. I think they did a fantastic job utilizing her for what she is and for the movie.
Yeah, I really loved the portrayal of Colossus. And so yes. It's not the first big screen adaptation of the character, but it's the one where it really felt like the character. Like, because Colossus is he's this really, like, emotional, like, gentle soul with a giant steel body. And, like, I love, like, the moment where her boob pops out and he's just like, oh, you like, can't look. It's just such that character. It's so perfect. Like, he's like, I'll punch you in the face, but let's not be lewd.
That was good. And by the way, how did you feel about, because the original actor, Daniel Cudmore, didn't want to do the character because it was going to be, you know,
voiced by somebody else.
Yeah. And so, I mean, I get that to an extent, but I don't know. I would just say go with it.
It didn't bother me. I mean, the only negative I have on that character was, like, it was a little weird that he was always in full, like,
armor
battle mode. Yeah, because he doesn't mm-hmm. live that way. It's right. Just like something you turn on and off. But I think maybe it's because of stuff, something like that. They're like, well, we can't just show him.
Probably too.
Because he was just in Days of Future Past. Mm-hmm. So people recently saw the character. So I don't think they wanted to just not step on that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I mean, I can kind of understand that. Like,
from an actor's point of view,
especially because. Yeah. Just being there on set every day, hours and hours, like, that's a lot of effort, and I'm sure, you want to encapsulate a full character, and I don't know if it's an ego thing or anything, but it has to be somewhat disappointing to have someone come up to you and be like, hey, you look great, or you're the right size, but we don't trust your performance to be able to handle that. Like,
I'm wondering why they chose not to have him voice it.
I couldn't find that. Really.
Like, I don't know if it's an accent thing.
I don't know.
Maybe.
It may just be, he may have just turned down the role and be like, I don't want to do any more Colossus. Like,
well, he said he didn't want to do it because he wasn't able to do the voice. Mm-hmm. So.
Oh.
So it was a very specific reason. Yeah.
So it might have been accent related. It might have been performance related. But I'm not going to blame him for feeling that way because I think a lot of people actually, if you get that and it's like getting half of a pot.
He stood,
like,
on principle and lost that on a nice paycheck, but I'm sure he's doing fine.
Yeah.
In the chat roll, I asked who everyone's favorite non-Deadpool character was. Okay. We got one vote for Vanessa from Gregory Castillo.
You're not going to give it to the taxi driver?
Yeah,
no votes for Dopinder yet. Serenity,
awesome. That's
Serenity
my vote.
Q said Copycat was robbed, which is Vanessa's alter ego.
Well,
in the comics.
No, I'd be robbed in the sense that yes, we didn't get to see that part of her, but I think that would really confuse the story.
Also, how would you fit that in?
Exactly, and that's what I'm saying.
That could be part of
the next one.
Yeah,
it changes the whole ending about him saving her.
Yeah, there's a sequel fodder.
Also, like, how she also a mutant, but he wasn't. Like, there's a lot to deal with.
Then you have to explain all that. We'd have to.
It's a lot of time.
Let me, Zach, was the blind lady in the comics?
She was blind, fantastic.
Yeah. I'll admit, like, my I don't have as deep a Deadpool knowledge as some, like, Coy Jandro, who wasn't able to be here today, but is a host on Marvel Movie News. He knows the character deeply in and out in a lot of ways. but so I'm not, I wasn't familiar with her.
I've heard that she was.
Yeah, she's part of the.
Yeah.
Okay.
And that they have not the most PC related.
No.
Like,
well, it was,
Certainly shown on screen.
It was rendered well. I mean, yeah, that's how they supposedly are in the comic as well.
Yeah. I love that line. Mm-hmm. Love is blind. No, you're blind.
Yeah.
It's a very quotable movie in general, which lends to rewatchability. It makes it memorable. But I think that every time I brought this up in conversation, someone's quoted a line and it's always a different line. Like, no one's quoting the same line.
Oh, yeah,
which
they're not getting it exactly right. Is that
no, there's just, like, such a variety.
Gotcha.
There's just so many things that are being quoted. Mm-hmm. They're probably also not getting exactly right, but...
at least one vote for Weasel.
Weasel, yes. Yeah. Speaking of him, obviously it's T.J. Miller, and he's so funny. And the editor was saying how, in general, whenever those two were on screen, he had the hardest time... He had the hardest time because they improv so much of it. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, obviously that messes up with continuity and all these different things. But it also brings, you know, you can pick the best take of what makes the most funny. But the two of them were just a riot on set.
I want to see all the outtakes from when they're making fun of his face. There must be 40 other lines describe what he looks like.
I'm sure. Absolutely, but the interesting apart from that, really, they actually didn't shoot too much in the sense of alternate takes and various things like they were the budget for it.
Yeah,
and Tim Miller's probably being very, very persnickety about how often I'm going to take a lot of takes. I don't have time for this. Was it because the shooting schedule is 48 days?
That's insane. That's like that's almost like an indie movie.
I know, that's crazy, right? 58 million, 48 days. You don't have a lot of time for a lot of takes.
All right, moving on.
Let's go. Let's get it done.
You know, big action sequences. Yeah. It's like, all right, that was funny. We got to go. We got to go flip over three cars today.
You know, one of the big things that obviously people are talking about is the fragmentation of the storyline in general. And, you know, I was trying to dig deeper of whether or not it was always like that in the script, but it seems like it was, and they did in editing try to play around with a structure that was just,
more linear,
and it just would not work. It needed to be what it is on screen, and so I wanted to kind of get your guys' opinion and thoughts.
I thought it was a great decision. Now, I don't know if the original script was like that. They say that about 70% of the original script is what it is now. I'm assuming they had jumps in time and space, and I thought I agree with the thought that if you had done it chronologically, it would have been a very, very serious movie for a long time before we got to who Deadpool has become, because he's going through cancer and all that other stuff. Whereas jumping back and forth, you don't get, instead of having a movie that changes tone, this tone pretty much stays throughout.
Yeah.
I think tone is the biggest thing about this movie, because you're bouncing, you're trying, it's a love story, yes, no, but it is, but it's a comedy, but no, it's an action adventure, but no, it's a sci-fi, no, it's a superhero. It's all those things, so it's balancing all those things, so you have to have at least a consistent tone, and the irreverence was there throughout. So that attitude, that Deadpool, the sarcasm and that kind of thing is all throughout, which I think you needed in order to keep this thing cohesive.
Absolutely.
I completely agree. I think that, I mean, we've said before that just the high you start on is important. And I think that also constructively and editing-wise, they did a nice job of, like, pairing kind of your switches in time with interesting sound mixing.
Yeah.
One that stuck out to me is when you, like, sped up again to be in the taxi and caught up. Yeah. They're like, there's a line over it that's in dialogue basically being like, and now you're crowding up, which is a joke about it. Then the sound is like a joke in itself. It has like the whole like whizzing through. Visually you're seeing that. So it's like on...
Do people know that reference? Because it's a VHS reference. You know?
Oh. Yeah.
I don't know. That's a great question. I don't know.
What, rewinding?
Yeah, because a 10-year-old kid is going to know what a VHS rewind is.
You know, I didn't even think about that. You know, it just is so
the same
natural
thing with the needle
to
rip
me.
On an LP. People still use that, and I'm going, nobody uses LPs. I mean, well, I guess they do in a sense.
No, they're even more popular now.
Yeah, that's true. They are.
They're vintage.
Yeah. But yeah, I agree. I'm curious. Like I know in the quotes that they chalked it up a lot to editing. I'd be very curious to see a shooting script for this movie because as soon as I left theater, I was crediting the writing for the nonlinear aspect because it had to be that way at the end of it. Like if we'd started with cancer and then got him superpowers, it would have been that's the traditional
it
origin
is. And
story.
That, exactly, and that's
flow.
Very formulaic, and you can't poke fun of it if you don't start ripping the tracks.
It wouldn't work with this. Yeah. With this movie, it just I can't picture it working at all if there's not some like Deadpool being Deadpool at the beginning. Yeah. And maybe it was just less, maybe it was like they start off with the test footage scene.
And if you go back to the tenets of writing, character is structure and structure is character. So if the structure was formulaic or like every other super, it would not be Deadpool, So you kind of have to play with that and mess with it, tweak it.
Well, what I like about it, I mean, this movie of all movies, like if you make a mistake, you know, I'm not saying it's the easiest thing in the world to fix, but you could just throw in lines of ADR or whatever you want
you
just to like insert it and make it work in whatever way you want.
Right.
You know, so I'm not saying like, oh, they just can do that and that's the easiest thing in the world, but it's certainly more than like any, you know, certainly can't necessarily do that for The Revenant.
Can't speak to that.
I'm just, you know what I mean? Like, because it lends to that silliness.
Oh, yeah, because, to a large degree, all bets are off in this movie. You can use these, any reference you want, because they go by so fast, like, it's half the audience will get it, some won't, they don't care, they're moving on. And I think they can use anything to their disposal, like a VHS rewind, because why not? Every 80s reference in there, half the audience is going, I don't know anything about it, but it's working.
I mean, look, a 12-year-old kid who shouldn't be in this movie.
Exactly.
For the, number one, but like, they'll just ignore that, I think. And they won't know who Wham is.
Yeah. And there's enough jokes and enough stuff in there spanning years that you're gonna get something. Like, that was one of my favorite parts of this movie. I saw it with a packed audience and I think every joke got at least one laugh out loud. Like, every single joke.
When did you see it? I'm curious. Like, when you see it, like, opening weekend?
Tuesday.
Okay, because I saw it twice, and I saw it that Sunday morning of Valentine's Day. I have a very understanding girlfriend.
Did you take her?
She requested going.
It was a big Valentine's Day.
Oh, no, I'm just wondering if
she
took her.
Wanted to. Well, I was going that weekend one way or the other, but she wanted to go on Valentine's Day.
See?
Nice. But I saw it. Nice. I saw it then, and at that audience, it felt very. Everyone was on board from the get go. But when I saw it again at like a matinee on Wednesday, I think the audience, and it was still a pretty packed theater, the audience needed to warm to it. I looked around when I walked in, I'm like, I'm pretty sure a lot of these people like saw the box office and were like it's like a lot of people over 60, like, oh, I should go check out this Deadpool thing. And like the first like 25 minutes, people weren't quite, I don't think they were quite sure what to do with it, except for like me and one other guy who was laughing hysterically. But by that 25-minute mark, people suddenly, like, figured out what was going on and really started laughing and enjoying it a little more.
I never thought that makes sense. That makes sense that there could be a warm-up, like, period.
The marketing prep, though. You know what I mean? Like, that's what, you know, for
some marketing prep, but you're sitting in the seat and the credit sequence. If you don't get it from the credit sequence, because that's credit sequence.
Basically,
amazing.
If you don't like the credit sequence, you're probably not going to like the rest of the movie, so you should leave.
Yeah.
Indeed. So as we're getting to kind of the Easter eggs and comparisons, what I liked about Simon Kinberg, who's produced, you know, the X-Men movies and so forth, he said any of the references made to this, it's all done actually with love for X-Men. It's done with a smile and a wink and affection. And so, you know, it's great that he obviously has this sign off on it, and it's great. But I'm going to turn it over to Zach.
I was going to say, our professional geek.
Yeah.
Well, there's a game. Everyone lists one of the Easter eggs and see who fails first.
Yes.
Starting with you, Sarah. Go.
The mask that he puts on his face before he reveals the kiss at the end. Hugh Jackman. Go.
Yeah. well, you have the toy from X-Men Origins Wolverine right above the Wham album.
Right next to the Hello Kitty, like, chapstick in another scene.
Which Hello Kitty is the only thing that Deadpool is following on Twitter.
It's an inside joke. It's in there. Chimichang is a reference.
They draw, like, because for anyone who's not familiar, Chimichang is Deadpool's favorite food, and he just eats it all the time. I don't think I've ever eaten a chimichanga because it's like deep fried burrito.
So good.
It sounds amazing and horrifying at the same time.
Fantastic.
But there's so many. I mean, probably one of my favorite lines in the whole movie. Stewart or McAvoy?
Yeah.
These timelines are so confusing. Because it's perfect. Especially for people who are just coming, who have seen the X-Men movies, but, like, never thought about it afterwards. There are two versions of a lot of these characters running around. A bunch of them were in the same movie last time.
There's, like, kind of layers of Easter eggs in this movie. There's, like, dialogue Easter eggs, toy Easter eggs, cameo Easter eggs.
Yeah,
It varies because some of them are Easter eggs that are just complete references to general pop culture or to actual Ryan Reynolds himself or to real life.
Yeah.
Then some of the Easter eggs are, of course, to creators, whether it be street signs, other cameos there. And then other ones are making fun of movies. Like,
there were two issues of People with, like, Sexiest Man Alive, one with Ryan Reynolds and one with Hugh Jackman. Like, what's happening? There were two references to Green Lantern. Yeah. There's the Don't Make It Green or Animated, the wallet at the beginning.
Yeah.
Just to, like, nod, like, yeah, Ryan Reynolds knows he's a ridiculous person. Yeah. And this is his third attempt at making a superhero movie.
I love this by far. Like, if we did a Stan Lee cameo appearance countdown, I think this
would. This is your favorite?
I mean, it's just so funny.
Yes.
Yeah.
Welcome up next on stage.
I
like, come on. He's at a strip club.
Strip club Stan.
There you go.
So ridiculous. What was it? Beast Won't Stop Shitting on My Lawn. There's like just some like little things, but like Deadpool was created in the comics was created in the same program as Wolverine, and they didn't really acknowledge that one way or the other in the movie. They easily could reveal that in the next one. We saw the mutant with the bones coming out of her back. It's called Marrow. This is a character from the books. Bob. The guy from Jacksonville. I think we have a photo of Deadpool and Hydra Bob, which is just, he's just like a no name, like not anything special about him. He's just like a random Hydra lackey in the comics. They couldn't call him Hydra for rights reasons because Disney owns the rights to Hydra.
So he's just Bob.
So he's just Bob from Jacksonville, whatever that was. It would be really funny if they brought him back. Like, he goes on adventures with Deadpool sometimes, so it'd be interesting to see. Another Disney thing, this one, like, I saw it and just, like, my brain just went, like, that can't be it. Because the end fight sequence looks like, Ajax's base looks like it's on a helicarrier.
A couple of people are saying that, but also it's a rights thing. You can't call it that. So
I wonder what the budget for just legal fees were. Because I swear, the writers just kept pushing it. Yeah. And, Kinberg was the one telling them, like, okay, what is within their arsenal that they can use and they can't use. And I'm sure it's like, okay, well, if Marvel does sue us, well, they can't because we just called him Bob. It's not Hydra Bob. At no point did we say it was Hydra Bob. And it's like, okay, you know, because you have to go through these various steps to make sure you're cleared.
And it's not like Disney and the Marvel team are not involved in this movie. They're still technically, like, the Marvel logo comes up at the beginning. Like, they're still technically involved. It's just Fox owns all the rights. So it's not like there wasn't somebody be like, oh, you can't do that. Like, they would have called him out on it, like, before it ever got there. But so I think the helicarrier maybe was just like, they know it looks like it, but they're like, no, it's just, it's a decommissioned warship.
We're just not going to talk about it.
Yeah. But it was, I mean,
they're not.
Yeah, it was cool.
I would be surprised if there was, it would be, I feel like for this movie, it's harder to find a scene without an Easter egg than it is to find the Easter eggs.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Can you pull up the photo? There was a pizza scene. The pizza scene, which had, like, it was straight up just from a book. Like, if you look at this panel, it's just like the, like, pineapple and olive. Like, it's all right there. Mm-hmm. And then, Feige's pizza. So, if Kevin Feige had a problem, he was aware of what, like, they called him out by name. Yeah. They had, one of the co-creators of Deadpool, Rob Liefeld, was in the bar.
Yeah.
He's there. They named the other one, Fabian Nichiza. Yeah. I don't know how to pronounce that name.
Is he the one who got the street signs?
Yes. Yeah, he got two street signs. And bonus street sign, Parker Ave.
There's Spider-Man, a lot of Spider-Man references in general. But yeah, it's chock full.
Yeah.
They didn't skimp. They were like, we can't have people, so we're just going to talk a lot.
Yeah. And then the biggest one was, of course, the end credits.
Oh, yeah.
Ferris Bueller. So ridiculous.
Mm-hmm. And of course, the Sam Jackson reference.
Yeah, everything in that scene was great, and I love that they held back the second piece of it until release because they did all the preview screenings and press screenings and everything, but they didn't put that second piece with Cable in any screenings until it was actually in theaters.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, because they really wanted to keep that quiet. It's like almost the same robe.
It might be. No,
it's like a little different.
They tried.
Yeah.
They really tried.
They got as close as they could. Limited budgets.
Can I jump in here for a second, too? Yeah,
sure. The voice of Stephen Lemieux from The Booth.
I just really loved that for their post-credit sequence, like, Marvel movies have this big habit of being like, let's have this gigantic scene with Thanos on a throne, and we have all these special effects and these explosions, and we have this character already cast, which we'll probably have to recast by the time we film the movie. But they're like, we're not going to show any of these characters. I'm just going to tell you exactly what the movie's going to be about, and we're going to save money on budget, because it's just me in a robe and a costume talking about this movie, and we don't have to film anything except me in a robe and a costume. Yeah. Like, I think that's brilliant.
It was also just a perfect thing, especially, again, with keeping it secret. Like, no one's going to wonder about, like, that. It was just Ryan Reynolds in a suit, in a bathrobe.
We don't even know.
It didn't even have to be Ryan Reynolds.
Yeah, it could have been just...
could have been stoned in his trailer.
Exactly.
I guarantee you there will be 25 to 50 Deadpool in that bathrobes at Comic-Con this year.
I would... Yes, you are correct.
Yeah.
I can't even take that bet.
And then, should we talk about Cable now, if anyone's curious?
We could talk. Steven, in our pictures, if you scroll later, there's Keira Knightley fan art.
Oh, my God.
Of Cable.
Yeah. Just the character, if anyone's curious. Like, they mentioned he's a time-traveling mutant with a bionic arm. He's from the future. He's actually the son of Scott Summers, Cyclops, and a Jean Grey clone named Madeline Pryor. Like, this is the insanity that can only happen in the comics. So, like, but they did, there was a long-running series, Deadpool and Cable, or Cable and Deadpool, rather. Did 50 issues over, like, 4 or 5 years. And so it was a very popular book. And so, like, I think everyone was sort of like, if they're going to do a sequel, they'll do that. And Cable is also a big part of X-Force, which is also being developed. Mm-hmm. And Deadpool is involved in X-Force at one point. Like, this little guy, he looks like... Mm-hmm. That's the X-Force costume.
Mixed it up.
Yeah. So they very clearly are, like, building a Deadpool universe now within their X-Men universe.
Mm-hmm. Very cool. So we've kind of talked about him a little bit, but I want to get more to Tim Miller, the director. He's been around for quite a bit. He's been working since 95, at least. That's when he started Blur Studio, which is his visual effects company. They've done sequences for Girl with a Dragon Tattoo, Thor, The Dark World. And this marks his debut, certainly. But in 2005, he did get an Oscar nomination for a short film called Gopher Broke. I have not seen this film, unfortunately.
I've not either.
If anyone has, let us know how it is, because apparently it's Oscar-worthy.
Yeah, the shorts are hard to find.
Yeah, they are.
A lot of times.
Except in Hollywood, when they do, like, every weekend, they do, like, Oscar shorts.
Yeah, but if you don't see it then, like, good luck. Like, years later?
Yeah. Yeah, I know what you're saying. One of the things I did find interesting was, you know, in talking about the gore, his editor spoke that while the movie is quite gory, Tim was very conscious not to take it to zombie levels. You know, even the autopsy, it doesn't go to that level, that it's always slapstick. You know, did you guys kind of, I mean, because we kind of talked about, touched on the gore a little bit. I mean, I felt it was around that. I don't think it went too far at any given point.
Yeah. I actually felt like they were holding back at certain points for budgetary reasons as much as
the other ones.
As like wanting to hold it back. But because like the goriest part was like the guy splatting on the sign in the opening sequence, because he actually, like, his body splatters.
Yeah.
But even that, like, it happens so quickly. Like, it cuts within half a second. So it didn't feel gory.
I thought a lot of it was slapstick, and the guy falling down from the sign was slapstick. But, you know, when he does the single shot, the last bullet through three heads, I don't think that was slapstick. That was pretty gory.
Fair enough.
Shooting through heads. Mm. So for me, there were times I was like, yeah, I could have done without that one. But it's a completely subjective issue. I mean, some people love it, some people don't. For me, I didn't need as much gore as they had, but I get that the character itself in the comics are apparently very gory. What about you? What was your?
I was going to say, like, I think I've just watched too many gory films because it didn't even faze me.
Oh, yeah.
I was kind of like, was there anything that fazed me? No. Like, there was a couple bullets through the head. Like, maybe I should be concerned more about that.
Perhaps you should. You know, I mean, what was also interesting to me was the fight. Should this be an R-rated movie? Mm-hmm. Should it not? And
clearly, yeah.
Well, the way it is, yes, yeah. Definitely. But in terms of Fox initially being, you know, I mean,
oh, having a PG, they wrote a PG version.
Yeah, they were initially like, oh, we don't get it. You sure this should be R? And he's like, yeah.
It needs sort of like. We're going to do butt jokes, or, like, butt sex jokes. Like, you're going to need that R rating.
Yeah.
I thought that, I mean, the R has become such a point of publicity for them.
Yeah.
And it has been the title of almost every article about Deadpool. Like, R-rated movie breaks box office, R-rated movie records. So much that it has been a benefit.
It's a badge of honor at the moment.
Yeah. Exactly.
So, but again, I think going back to the character of Deadpool, that's what he was. He was an R-rated character.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
so
I mean,
why make it a PG-13? That hardly ever works.
It would have stunted the character to hold it back.
Because anybody who really liked Deadpool would be going, "What am I watching? This is not."
Although I would pay to see a version. It's always funny to me when you just bleep out things just randomly. You know, and I think what I would love to see is just a weird version where they don't bleep out the swears, but bleep out some other stuff. That would be funny.
That would actually, like, as weird as that is, that would be very Deadpool.
See? I would enjoy it.
You just bleep out random thoughts? Random? What do you mean?
Well, it's like
I'll post it. You'll see it. Okay, you're like the Fox executive. You just don't get it.
Isn't it like Jimmy Kimmel or someone that does that, like, unnecessary censorship? Yeah, like, do that for this movie. It's a funny gag.
It would be. The other part of it, obviously, you know, I think, you know, looking at him as a director, you could say, oh, well, he's never directed a movie. But I think the fact that he has such a knowledge of visual effects.
Yeah.
Obviously helped the movie tremendously, and I initially thought, okay, here's a visual effects guy, he would do a lot of effects, but, you know, as he says, he wanted to do a lot of it just in camera, as much as possible, and then enhance it, because that's what makes the best visual effects. So, I think that showed, definitely.
Yeah, I mean, it keeps it seamless. Like, because your brain gets... It's why Jurassic Park still looks like some of the best graphics in movies, because they trick your brain into thinking it's all real, even when only like half of it is.
Yeah. Any other things that you guys found on Tim specifically that was of interest?
I'll let you know if something pops in my head.
You know, so why don't we move on to cinematography? I found it very interesting of all that the guy who made Project X also did this movie. And not to say he's a bad cinematographer, but it's also one of my favorite movies. So for me, there was that personal connection. But I mean, so Ken Sang is the cinematographer, Project X, Bad Words with Jason Bateman, Step Up 3D, and Sorority Row. So it's kind of an interesting filmography there, you know, that he's done. And, what, you know, in terms of that, again, this kind of goes back to more of Tim, but they were, even though it was digital, they were very cognizant of how much they shot every single day, and it was very, very fast. Yeah. So
budget.
Right. Yeah, but you know, the interesting part about that, yes, it's budget, but it's also you know there's an experience that comes with it. I mean, John, you and I have direct experience on set, but sure. You can know budget, but if you don't know how to work and direct and navigate and lead people,
yeah,
you might be conscious of the budget, but you don't know what to do with or about that budget to make sure you're staying within that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
you know. So I commend him tremendously for that.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure because of his visual effects background, I mean, he obviously knew how he wanted to handle those sequences. But it also helps in the editing room when you think of visual effects because you're always figuring out how to do transitions and how to get seamlessly from one to another. I'm sure that was part of the game because if you're only shooting 48 days, you've got to figure out how to get in and out of these things fast.
Yeah, and they were, you know, they also weren't rolling like five cameras any single time. They were just rolling what they needed to, you know. And I think it's very cost effective in that way. Just shoot exactly what you need. You got it.
Yeah.
Boom. Which again can be scary, especially for a movie like this. You're like, ooh, we don't have that shot. How are we gonna switch it up?
I'd love to see his storyboards or how he arranged that.
I'm sure there's gonna be a ton of behind the scenes.
Yeah, this is one of those movies where like I desperately want the Blu-ray so that I can watch the special features. Like a lot of movies I'm like, I know what, like it's a movie, like you shot a movie, I get it. This movie, like I feel like there was probably so much behind the scenes work that went into it that was different, that
yeah,
was interesting.
The opening sequence alone,
yeah,
okay, how did you just want to see that process,
all
how
the stills later. And
yes,
stuff,
yes, absolutely.
Almost want to hear about like the union battles they must have had to go to put Nolan's actual name in the front of the movie, which is a huge problem.
Yeah, but here's why I don't think like there's so many movies that don't have opening credits anyway. Mm-hmm. That as long as you put them at the end,
yeah. Oh, it's just union hurdles.
I've never really dealt with that.
The big example that I know of, and I'm sure it's been like a little bit reformed, but like Star Wars had to go non-union for a lot of things because their opening scroll meant no opening credits, and that's for most unions require you to put people in the opening credits just as part of their deal that you negotiate. So you have to like I don't know the whole process, but it is not easy to get away with not putting like A-list actors from A-list SAG actors or DGA directors in the opening credits.
Yeah, that's interesting because I there's plenty of movies that I can think of that don't have it, you know, and it's interesting, you know, like The Matrix doesn't have one.
Yeah.
So
there may or may not have been union. I'm not sure about The Matrix actually. I mean, even studios don't necessarily have to go. Well, it's complex. It's all super complex.
This is interesting. No, this is something that I'll look into more. I did not know this.
Like I'm still learning because even when the acting unions merged, it became even more. Somehow, it became more complicated to work between the two areas.
Hollywood is very complicated. Yeah, if you've learned nothing about this.
We're producing even on a small level, it becomes like I can't hire half my actor friends because they're union, and I'm like I can't pay you.
yeah, it's an interesting business. Sarah, you're unhireable to Zach.
Anyway, let's go more into our extensive notes.
Hey, where would you like to go into?
I mean, we've talked a bit about cinematography. We've already kind of talked a little bit about wardrobe and makeup. Another added fact was just that Ryan Reynolds is known for his very chiseled physique, and it kind of
I was unaware.
He is, and it kind of turned into I guess, a problem for wardrobe because his suit had had a muscle layer in it to make sure he looked cut. And because he was already cut, when they put it on, it made him look kind of awkward and too big. So they had to remove it. They had to remove the muscle layer because of Ryan Reynolds already being in shape enough.
Thanks for making the rest of us feel bad.
What do you mean the rest of us? I'm fine.
He's basically too jacked for his muscle suit. We already talked about
his pineapple face.
Yeah, so, that's what they said. Yeah. We talked about makeup, how many hours it took. For instance, one of the scenes where the fight scene where everything's on fire. First of all, the fire marshal almost shut them down because he thought that the ceiling was going to combust because it got so hot. And they were in these conditions. Wow. So the fire marshal was in there like, the ceiling's going to combust. They kept going. But that should have been a one-day shoot. Basically, they had to do two-day shoots because he was taking so long in makeup. Like, he had to spend so many hours.
Selfish.
Yeah. I think he was in makeup till like 1 p.m. or something.
Whoa.
So they was extending the shoot there just because he had to get ready. And then it's these hot conditions. And then he's naked. Like, so much going on. But a lot of people are really happy with the way the suit turned out. That's always a big thing for comic book movies. So I think,
especially the way they built
you did
it.
Your job.
To build to what?
You know, because we've seen it, whether in Spider-Man or whatever, where they're kind of putting together their costume and we've seen the various iterations of it. And then finally, the lady tells him, you should get red.
Let's blind out.
Yeah, lemon and seltzer water.
Yeah.
I love the big one. He's got the little pen trying to get that big old blood stain.
I did love that sequence though, like just because we didn't talk about it before, like
the montage of him
becoming Deadpool, was great. And another one of my favorite moments when he like throws the girl and it's like, is it sexist to hit you? Is it more sexist not to? The line is very fuzzy. Yeah,
that was great. So let's want, you know, I've kind of touched upon the editing just because there's a great article from The Verge that Julian Clark spoke about, and it kind of goes into various things, but specifically for the editing for him, he had to strike that balance. And John, you talked about it with the story, where if it was linear, it would be serious at the beginning and too funny at the end, and it wouldn't have made sense.
Shift would have been much more difficult to make then.
Yeah, and so with this, even they had to be very careful in certain moments. So like when she gets kidnapped, they knew, you know, they figured out that for 1 minute they could not really tell jokes. Then they could go after it, but that scene needed to really hit. Otherwise,
you got to let the audience absorb that before you just make jokes about it. Otherwise, it doesn't have the emotional impact you wanted to.
Exactly. But apparently, they had plenty of jokes if they wanted to put in there.
Yeah.
And so that he says was their biggest challenge. But he also, you know, we'll kind of talk about this certainly when we get into the sequel. But he does say he fears that the sequel is going to be much harder to actually make because of the various things involved.
Yeah.
In terms of story.
Oftentimes sequels are harder to make in general. On top of that, I know that they are in works already on the script for the sequel, like they're underway, but you know, because everything that you survived on your first, like, you have to build on. There's a higher expectation because audiences now, just for the tone of it, you can't do exactly the same thing because it's not as shocking or surprising. So it's like a weird departure of being loyal to what you wrote and expanding upon it. Then you have to, I mean, for this one, they'll be able to, I think, come up with a bigger goal than what he had.
And that's what I agree with. You have to. I think you would have to, because otherwise, what's going to keep our attention? Our attention was kept because of the humor and the tone, and we didn't know this character, so all of that was new to us. And the fact that he was chasing, what's his name, to get his face back, and then that just goes away. Oh, you believe that?
What's his name? Francis.
And it goes away. And we're okay with that. I don't think you're going to be able
to
get away with that.
That's not going to be enough for
a second.
Yeah,
it's not going to be
enough. You have to come up with some bigger thing.
But that also goes, how do you do that? Because you have a character who doesn't really care.
You mean so, the problem drive? Is, does he care? The
exactly.
next one.
What are you going to give him to drive? What's going to drive it?
You got to just. I mean, the key is going to be finding his want. Like, mm-hmm. if it would feel a little bit like going back down the same road if it's mm-hmm. like about Vanessa
yeah,
or,
you're gonna put her
or
in Jeopardy
any other
again,
woman.
Or?
But if we're bringing, I mean, if they're really bringing Cable into it, that means mm-hmm. that they're playing with time travel, mm-hmm. and they could really just do anything.
Well, then that would be fun.
So like it could be. I mean, that's the thing is like this movie had such a simple like want for mm-hmm. him. Mm-hmm. It didn't matter. It was just the journey that was fun. So like mm-hmm. if the want is just like classic, like we got to get home. Like we gotta get back, like that could be enough for him to just engage with the scenario and yeah. have fun with it. I do think that it's going to be an uphill battle though. I think they would almost have an easier time with the sequel if it hadn't done so well.
Oh yeah, sure.
Because the expectations for both the audience and the studio are going to be so high now. Like Deadpool, like a lot of people are talking about it,
yeah,
rewriting how
you could
superhero
easily
movies
play
are
with
be
that
seen.
Because your character Deadpool could make fun of people who have high expectations. I mean, that'd be
amazing. Well,
the
danger
meta.
Now is because it was so successful. I think you're going to see a lot of people ripping it off, sure. whether within Fox and the X-Men right. universe or outside yeah. of it. And the question is, if other movies do the breaking the fourth wall thing, which mm-hmm. is so inherent to Deadpool, if they do it too much. Is that going to burn out the audience just on that style of comedy mm-hmm. by the time they get the sequel up and in theaters?
Well, that's what I'm saying. I think you the fact that others will copy it, because they will, you can have Deadpool making fun of that copying. I mean,
yeah.
you can use that to your advantage in your movie because he's self-aware.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think you're right. I think that will save them at the end
yes.
of the day. But it's going to not going to be an easy script to write.
Mm-hmm. But, you know, to me, the possibility? I would love to see this joke. There's a great South Park episode where I forget which character says, "Wow, this is bigger than the Lord of the Rings final battle," and you never see any of it. And I would love to see Deadpool just say something like that, and we don't see any of it.
Yeah, I could see that happening too. That'd be a great gag.
Yeah. Anyway, yeah,
just
so
describing
there's definitely challenges. I mean, who knows? I can't say. But the nice part, if they allow them to just stick to being, you know, writing the material that they want. I mean, I don't think, you know, they're going to trust Ryan Reynolds. Not that he was instrumental in the writing of it, but certainly in getting it made.
In the rewrite.
So, just let them do their thing and don't put pressure on them.
Yeah, well, the good news is Ryan Reynolds has also signed on to do many more Deadpool appearances. He refuses to do any other comic book characters. He's done with them except for Deadpool, but he's willing to make... He's, like, on for this role.
Yeah.
He loves it.
I mean, with the reaction from audiences, like, he could be the next guy, like, to really take over, like, a franchise. Like, with Hugh Jackman stepping out of X-Men movies, like... Deadpool may become like a threat, like even if it's just in like mm-hmm. post-credit sequences,
yeah.
like
yeah.
he just pops up and like comments on whatever just happened. Like it'd be a fun thing to play with at the end of movies. I think part of it's just like Ryan Reynolds just so is Deadpool, mm-hmm. the same way that Robert Downey Jr. just is Tony Stark, and Hugh Jackman just like, I don't know if he is in real life, but he just became Wolverine. Like he made himself synonymous with it in such a way.
Yeah.
On screen, that like Ryan Reynolds just is Deadpool. He might like that. People are petitioning to have Deadpool as Deadpool on Saturday Night Live because that's how much he is. Not just Ryan Reynolds; they want the character on Saturday Night Live. Has like 55,000 signatures already, like a week.
He stole the suit.
These
he
are
might
the
get.
Issues we care about.
Yeah.
So it didn't bother anybody about the storyline or the fact that it was just a simple story? You were all okay with that? Because you said you had some concerns and some
issues. If I had to really nitpick and if I, you know, was going that route, yes, I could find plenty of I could find those mm-hmm. nitpicks. But in the grand scheme of it, it just gets masked by so many of these jokes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, to me, it all hinges upon, do you believe their love story or not?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And because he's that type of character that, as you guys mentioned, that just doesn't care about much of anything, you know, I don't know. It's hard for me to say, okay, is it 100%, you know, would he love her or not? And so because there's that question mark, I'll just give it to them.
I think that, I mean, I love this movie, but I think that if this movie hadn't been funny or didn't have the attitude that it did, and you just looked at it on story, like if I came out on this and was like, wow, I didn't laugh at all, I think it'd be really easy to nitpick. I think you could nitpick, like, wait, why didn't he just go back to her? And, like, why is this, like, face thing such a big deal? Why are you centering a movie around that? Why, like, there's weird things about people disappearing for a while and the whole motivations of the villain. Like, there's things that aren't extremely deep that if this movie hadn't been funny or welcoming or, like, original, that you could have nitpicked a lot of that. But I don't care because I liked so much and so much worked that I didn't need a movie that was super deep and everyone had all of these layered things going on.
Let me just ask you this. You know, obviously it was kind of a last resort for him, but he volunteered himself for this operation.
Right.
And what they did with him, again, it was very funny and it worked. But at the same time, as Sarah said, if it wasn't funny, I'd be like questioning him of like, what, you volunteered for this? Like, didn't you ask any questions?
I was going to die. What's there to question? I'm going to die. I got cancer riddling throughout my body. I'm going to die. Sure, Brian, let's do it.
Anyway, so then you're upset that you look like an avocado.
That's true.
Had sex with an older avocado.
But like you're alive. Like,
you couldn't shut your mouth up enough.
But there's so many good things to talk about that you don't need to really talk about those parts.
I mean, he only went nuts with breaking out and everything after he found out what he was going to be doing.
Mm-hmm.
So it's that he's not... He's out for himself, but he's also not... He's not... Maybe he's not a hero, but he's not a villain. And that's sort of his line,
mm-hmm.
And that's the difference. So he won't go out of his way to save people, but he won't go out of his way to hurt people either. Mm-hmm. And
except
he wasn't going to be a part
except
of
the people in the bars because he just
evil.
Wants to start fights. Yeah. And gets killed.
Well, those guys started asking for it.
Excellent. Let's talk about the music because it's so integral. And before we talk about the actual the soundtrack and in terms of the score, Tom Hulkenborg, known from Junkie XL, he did the score. And it's interesting. I actually reading this is very interesting, but because I don't know the instruments, I don't know the sound. It makes no sense to me whatsoever. Mm-hmm. But he wanted to have that 80s canvas for him to paint on. And so there's a great article on Gizmodo that you guys can check. Where the hell did it go? He says, I thought it was great to use sounds and music ideas that in the 80s were perceived as very serious, and now in hindsight, when you play them back, very funny. He started off with a clone of the ARP 2600 synth that kind of carried off the track. He used Van Halen's Jump for the more gritty, emotional scenes, and then he used kind of the eerie, iconic sounds of Michael Jackson's Beat It for something else.
So he used the Oberheim synthesizer for the gritty, emotional scenes, and that was also what was used in Van Halen's Jump. Got it.
Indeed. But, of course, as we opened up the show, Shoop, by Salt and Pepper. I mean, this just has so many great songs, which apparently were written into the script.
Mm.
Which rarely do you have that.
Yeah, no.
You want to... When you're doing a movie with Fox, song rights, I think they're a little more attainable.
Mm-hmm.
And this is sort of feeding off of the Guardians reaction. Mm-hmm. Because using classic music in that movie became such an integral part of not just the movie itself, but how it was marketed, how people found it, and why they fell in love with it. Because it gave them an easy access and relatability. And bringing in pop song, even recognizable songs.
Yeah.
It aided it in every way.
And what's funny, it has such a wide range, right? You go from Wham to DMX, and they're both still him, you know? Because he cues up DMX himself, and that's the funny bit of it all, but he has that range, so it's not just a single tone.
Mm-hmm.
I enjoyed that quite a bit.
Yeah, I never knew that I'd been waiting for years for X gonna give it to you to be attributed to an X-Men like hero walk.
See,
all my life, like I never knew. There was another song that was instead of Shoop they were originally gonna use and they couldn't. Oh, what was it?
That I'm unaware of.
It was. Give me a minute. I'll come back.
What did you guys think of? Because there was the YouTube personality's Team Headkick wrote the song Deadpool Rap.
Oh, I love that. It's like I listened to it on the actual album, like in full.
Yeah,
and it's just like it's using the music, like or using the story of it. Like they mentioned Colossus at one point. Like it's all in there.
It's a good song.
Yeah,
it's a good song.
And they brought that. This is just a bunch of guys who like did. A rap about Deadpool like 3 years ago.
Yeah, for the video game specifically.
Yeah,
yeah.
And they're like rewrite it.
Yeah, because from what I understand, the Deadpool game that isn't that good. Is what I hear. Just in general,
I haven't played it.
Fair enough. So it's cool that it got used. You know, something from that. Deadpool pre 2016 apparently is just not very good. Except for the comics.
I actually heard the game was good. It's supposed to be very funny and like very heavy on X-Men references. It's one of those that's like sitting in my like queue of like I'll buy that when I have time, which I won't.
Steven, do you know anything about this game? You're a big gamer.
No, I didn't play it. I heard it was well received though.
Oh, what do I know?
Fans liked it. It's apparently not like anything revolutionary, but it's like a good Deadpool story.
Right. Fair enough. All right, so let's get into the promotion of this because I mean, many people are saying like this. The promotion of this
you mean
will
the
be
leaked footage. Oh no, I'm sorry, that was leaked footage. That wasn't promotion. Go ahead.
You could start with that.
After that, they did this whole other marketing
that's
scheme.
Right.
But I mean, yeah. So you know, so many business sites are talking about just the business side of this advertising, and there's a great picture. And I forget if I pulled it or not, or if I just saw it, but on Ryan Reynolds' Instagram of them in a meeting. And when I say a meeting, it is about the size of our entire facility of just people. And this is just strictly the marketing department for this damn movie. And Ryan Reynolds at the head of it. So obviously there was a lot that went into it, and I just love it. The whole wait till you get a load of me, and most recently send me your tick pics.
I mean, I did not know about the send me your tick pics campaign, but I did find a lot of people were entertained by the marketing for this film.
Yeah.
Just the marketing seemed to be and it also seemed to like. Change different genres. My favorite story was one of my friends thought there was two posters, and one of them was kind of more of an action-based Deadpool poster, and one of them looked more like a romantic movie poster. And they were just like, wait, is this the same movie? But I just thought so many people were talking about it. The word of mouth leading up to this movie was great. Mm-hmm. I think the anticipation was up, and then the fact that paid off, and I don't think a lot of people were disappointed. It's fantastic.
And nothing else is close to it right now. There's nothing. No. What else is playing right now that can compete with it? There's nothing.
What was it? The Choice? Wasn't that out soon?
Well, what I loved, you know, they did a whole campaign of 12 Days of Deadpool in the Christmas time leading up to that trailer. And, you know, Mark Weinstock, 20th Century's Fox president of marketing, said, you know, that this reaffirmed his faith in social media. And there's the emoji of the dead icon. Mm-hmm. The shit icon followed by an L.
Dead poople.
So, like, again, you know, the fact that you had all these people in that where they were willing as a marketing department to go to that level and have a shit emoji as part of their campaign.
Like, I think that was just one billboard in LA, but, like, those are not cheap billboards. Like, somebody at Fox approved spending thousands of dollars to just put up a sign that says, that has skull, or that was it, was skull poople. Yeah. And it's just a skull poop and an L, and then Valentine's Day. What is that supposed to, that is only marketing to people who are already going to see the movie.
But no, but everybody's going to be talking about it. What does that mean? They're all asking that question. Yeah. It's a movie. So they're all talking about it.
Yeah.
So.
And it paid off. The marketing paid off with the box office numbers. So congrats to them.
What I was surprised by was how shocked everybody was at the response. They were not ready for it.
I was thinking,
hadn't you done your
screenings
and whatever?
It's the money. Like, I think that they expected people to like it, but... Mm-hmm. You look at it, and no one expected the 130-something opening.
That's what I mean. I'm surprised that they test screenings and audiences and stuff.
If Dimitri was here, he would go off about how the measuring system is so outdated and stupid and old, and he'd go off for the next 40 minutes about it.
That's true.
So, you know, it just is what it is.
I mean, the marketing was there. Like, they did enough. Like, they blanketed everyone in marketing.
They had a PSA for Bachelor.
Yeah,
like, come on, who has that?
So did Ride Along. Ride Along had a Bachelor spot too. Like, and it didn't make that. And then you look at, there are brands like Disney and whatnot who you're looking at openings that are still under 100, and that's considered really good. This broke 100. This is $35 million over 100 for opening. Like, that is a real, it beat, I believe, Iron Man's opening. When it comes to Marvel and superhero movies, it's cracking the top 10 on its opening numbers, and that's including ensemble pieces, that's including characters that are much more familiar to the general public. Like, that
costs
is
three
a good
times
move.
As much.
Yeah.
I think it comes down to, like, the way, because the advertising for this movie was so unique. Mm-hmm. It was, they tailored it to this movie and the audiences. Like, mm-hmm. they knew that they had something. Mm-hmm. They knew they had something different here that people were going to like, and that appealed to fans as much as general audiences, and they let the character breathe into the marketing. And I think that everyone watching could tell, like, Ryan Reynolds was not just, like, promoting. He wasn't just out, like, doing press. He loved what he was doing, and that is infectious.
Yeah, there's a passion behind it, and I think the passion also tapped into Deadpool's unfamiliarity to a lot of people. For instance, I'm going to compare it to, in a month, we have Batman versus Superman opening. Mm-hmm. Those are just two such well-known characters that there's so many expectations of what they should or should not be, versus Deadpool had a curiosity. Like, mm-hmm. people didn't really know what they were going to do with this story. Like, they had advanced marketing. You thought it was going to be funny. You thought it was going to be out there. But you didn't really know the boundaries that this character had. Versus, you kind of know what to expect from something like Batman versus Superman, from someone like Iron Man, from these characters that we're more familiar with and lend themselves to be more formulaic.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's why it's got great word of mouth, because mm-hmm. it turns all that formula on its head.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And at the end of the day, it's a good movie. Right? And that's what it hinged on. So. You have that. By the way, I don't want to go. We spoke of all the records. I don't want to read this damn thing. At this point, they're just making up records that they broke.
Yeah,
I feel like that happens every time. Like, anytime a big movie comes out, they're like records. I'm like, why?
Well, it's
is
like
that
the Tuesday
recording?
Night, Tuesday yeah. matinee record was yeah. broken.
Who cares?
On 62 screens and.
Yeah, I mean, one of the records is Ryan Reynolds' career opening weekend. Like,
really? I guess that's a point. That's an interesting point, because he's done so many big movies.
Speak for him. I'm sure he's not balking at it.
Yeah.
But I'm just saying, like, if you're already number one, like, if you're already breaking the records that it's breaking, and then, like, it just isn't automatic.
You don't need to say it. Like,
yeah, so anyway.
It's T.J. Miller's biggest box office movie.
Since Big Hero 6.
There you go. Yeah, we can go on and on about it, and we have the full list. So download the rundown in our show description. You can get it all there. Like I said, I don't care to read it because there's just so many. But it did get an A from CinemaScore, as well as an 84% on Rotten Tomatoes. So obviously very, very high. Very well, you know, and we've just even recently we had movies where critics. Are given mm-hmm. it a high score, like with Hail Caesar, and people mm-hmm. dislike it. Or it goes the other way around, where you have Pride and Prejudice, low critic score, higher fan score. So this is
neck and neck.
Yeah.
It's doing very well. I also am kind of curious, the reception for this, and a lot of the records were about it being R-rated. I'm wondering how that's going to push the rest of the year. I believe Wolverine 3 has already come out and said that now they're pushing for an R rating because of this.
It's a rumor, wasn't it? Like tied to like some toys or something.
I don't know.
Show.
I don't remember that part, but
Yeah, I mean that's the big thing is that everyone's talking about now, like, oh well, let's just make everything R rated, like, and I think that's such the wrong lesson to take from this.
It didn't get a release in China, right?
No, it did not.
So how's that going to affect its numbers?
Well, it's doing well enough overseas.
I know but what could it have done? I mean, who knows? I'm sure they're looking at that, going, yeah, but if we had made it a.
I don't think it's in India either. Not that India is a big market.
No, it got in there, but they had to do some.
Was it like China and Uzbekistan?
Uzbekistan, yeah. But India, they had to do some editing. But I'm sure the people who are doing the numbers are going,
I agree that I hope it doesn't turn every movie into an R-rated movie. However, I think that it's going to say big things for or about Suicide Squad in particular. Yeah. Because of the nature of those characters, if you come out at the end of the year, and I said this before at the box office show, like these two, Deadpool and Suicide Squad, are going to be compared to each other, just because they're a darker side of, and there's a comedic tone. Like they're going to be compared to each other, and Suicide Squad, I think, is going to need to have some gritty moments, be a little, because it's Suicide Squad.
But I think it's, go ahead, Zach.
Oh, have they set up what or said what they're pushing for Suicide Squad?
There's been debate. So originally, I've heard that it was set to be PG-13, but with all of this, a lot of people want it to be rated R. It's just like what's already being filmed.
The trailers don't look like they're going for R. It looks like it's going to be violent, but nothing like over the top. I mean, I don't personally have high hopes for Suicide Squad based on the footage I've seen so far. But I mean, if they're going back in to just add in what, like gore,
that's not
like,
gonna go well either.
Like they've shot the movie at this point. Like don't try to go back and like tweak it to go to get an R rating. I'm worried that's the lesson as opposed to just doing the
character justice.
Character and the story.
Would Avengers have been a better movie? Was it an R?
No. Here's the thing. James Gunn came out. I mean, he's been adamant about this of like Hollywood's taken the wrong story of all of this. And, you know, he's done Guardians of the Galaxy, working on Guardians of the Galaxy 2. And, you know, it's what he also gets into was that he spoke of like once Guardians of the Galaxy came out, he's gone through this entire thing of people now being like, oh, we got to copy this.
Yeah.
It's like, no, that's not the lesson. And he goes on to say, like, this isn't the first time characters really break a fourth wall. This isn't the first time that we've had an R-rated superhero movie. Like, I mean, granted, Kick-Ass isn't to this level.
Punisher,
you know. And so and he gave other examples, too, you know. And obviously, that's James Gunn. So he has some weight to it. And so just... Yeah, I don't want to see it. If it makes sense for the project, by all means. Yeah. But don't do it just to do it.
Yeah, like Wolverine, I'm torn on. Because the character of Wolverine very much can live in an R-rated world. Like, they've done, like, the Wolverine Max line, which is the Marvel's comic book line that's, like, effectively an R rating. Like, with, like, nudity and, like, and extreme violence and swearing, all of that. So Wolverine could go there, but not the version that they've been building all these years.
No.
And I would say, like, making Wolverine 3 an R would feel like that would feel like they're pushing, they're like stretching to be like Deadpool because, like, how like people are expecting the cinematic Wolverine, which is different from the comic book Wolverine.
I agree. I think it's going to be an interesting balance, and we'll see how it plays out in all of these movies that are coming up. But it's definitely started a debate.
That said, I would love, like, R-rated X-Force. Like, I think at this point, like, if Zoolander, I'm looking at our...
Zoolanders.
I have the chat open, and Zoolander was right there, because I was thinking Deadpool 2. If Deadpool 2 does well, then I would love to see Deadpool and Cable in X-Force together as, like, the third in this Deadpool series. And that being R, I think could be fun, like, because it's separate from the X-Men universe. You can let those two run their separate courses and not step on each other.
Fair enough. Anything that we sort of missed on? I know, again, in the grand scheme of things, we'll be judged on 8,000 things that we did not talk about.
If we have a minute, I did have a question, because as someone who wasn't familiar with the character beforehand, I was interested in reading interviews to find out that the makers of this movie really advocated Deadpool being a pansexual character. And that was not something that I had really picked up on, I guess, in watching the film until afterwards when I was reading it. And I was like, okay, I could see it kind of being in there. Did that affect – did any of you, Coach, pick up on that? Or did you –
Well, there was the one scene in, like, when the love sequence when he's taking it to use cleaner language. That was, I think, as far as they did in the movie. I think it was more like I think Ryan Reynolds was just sort of remarking on the character could do.
I thought it was interesting, but they did say, like, interviewers, like, someone stated Deadpool's sexuality, and they were corrected, and they were told, like, Deadpool's pansexual.
It makes sense for the character. Like, I don't think I've ever read, I haven't personally read any comics where they deal with it. But that doesn't mean they're not.
Yeah,
out
I was
there.
Just like, I was like, huh, I didn't know that.
It makes sense. Characters so all over the place. Like, you probably would be game for whatever. And let's face it, it's the Marvel Universe. Like, not necessarily just two genders.
This is true.
Fair enough. I did read that Ryan Reynolds kind of joked about it and all these things. So who knows? And, you know, whether or not it's legit or he is petitioning to have more relationships in the second movie, who knows? Anything else that you want to bring up?
I'm trying to think of any other debates that were out there in particular. Nothing's coming to mind.
Well, fair enough. Why don't we start getting into some final thoughts? Zach, you want to start us off?
I feel like I've been saying it this whole time, but it's like, this is what a labor of love looks like on screen. And that's what people need to take away from this movie, is like, when you truly love what you're making, when you're passionate about it, and you just want it to be the best thing because you want it to be the best thing, for you and for the audience, for everyone involved, good things happen. Like, passion makes good movies, and this is the best example of that.
Speaking of labor of love, I loved when he goes home and he's had a bad day and gets his things and goes in his room.
I thought that...
This is so damn funny.
The unicorn he's talking about.
Yes.
This movie is just easy to quote and easy to reference. I think that it's something that I hope lasts, and I'm excited to see more of. And I think that everything that Zach said was correct. Like, labors of love are what engage audience. Like, if you make something you love, someone else will probably love it too. Instead of this whole play to include the entire market and to broaden and to try and sweep everyone in, then people just leave disappointed. And I think this movie was fun, and I look forward to buying it and probably seeing it again. So, nice job.
There you go. I don't really have anything more to add to those things because
Fair enough. I mean, what I will say is, again, I really hope people don't take away the wrong lessons. Like, if people are saying, oh, we need to make superheroes funny, like, Avengers been funny.
Yeah,
like, there's humor in them. So
don't make them specific, but they don't have to be like, because then you'll just make a bunch of them like each other.
Yeah. Find what's unique about each character. There's a reason that character has lasted in the hundreds and hundreds of superhero characters that are out there. Like, Captain America is a very political figure. So The Winter Soldier was a very political movie, and Civil War will be a very political movie because that's what the character is. Deadpool is a wacky nut job, so the movie was just
wacky
nuts.
Wacky nut job.
Yeah.
That's right. So, as we wrap up, thank you guys for joining us. As mentioned at the top of the show, any pictures we used, and you can also see our full rundown, just in the description, there's a link. Download it. It's a zip file, so don't be alarmed, and it's all kind of contained within there. And also, most importantly, this movie is going to continue to be talked about. Like I said, I mean, just in the time that we've done the show, 400 articles have been written, probably. So, you know, continue the conversation. That's what it's all about. It's not about just us having a final say on any of it. It's because we have a passion for it, and we want to discuss it, you know, in a meaningful way, and we want to take that to all these facets, right? So that's comment. And for those of you who participated in the live chat, thank you guys for doing so. I know we didn't go to you guys as much as sometimes other shows we do, but thank you nonetheless. Follow us at The Popcorn Talk for all the various shows. Sarah does Box Office Breakdown on there, so you can check that out. But also, support Zach at...
You guys can find me on Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube at ThatZachWilson, and on our sister network, AfterBuzz, talking about a lot of things, including all of the Marvel television that's out there. We're talking Daredevil in just a few weeks, which is possibly even more violent than Deadpool, because Punisher's coming. Punisher's coming, you guys.
And Sarah, you have a Twitter now.
Yeah, although I have been failing to use it. But it's at Sarah_Stretton.
It's like an email account. You got a lot of, you know, I'm sure you got a lot of mentions. And once you open it up, you'll see them all.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And I'll be thankful. Thank you.
John?
No, I don't have a Twitter.
You can catch John on Call the Midwife on AfterBuzzTV.com. Check him out there. And, of course, here on other shows. Unfortunately, Dimitri couldn't make it today, but he'll be back nonetheless. And in the meantime, go see other movies. We'll be doing obviously plenty in the coming weeks. So thank you. Bye.
Producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the rest of the Anatomy of a Movie staff, we would like to thank you for listening and subscribing to the show. If you have any questions or comments, feel free to email or tweet us. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been Anatomy of a Movie.